Sorry. Terribly sorry. They said I was 8 when they found me, in some alley in Dallas. I was bleeding, and my arm was broken. He must have dumped me there. I don't know. Maybe I ran away. I don't remember. But he never came for me. No one ever came for me. Your mother? I don't know. I don't remember her. Maybe she was dead. Maybe she was like Catherine's mother and pretended not to know. I only get flashes, nightmares of the worst of it. I don't even know my name. They weren't able to identify me. You were safe then. You've never been shuffled through the system. There's no feeling of safety, only impotence. They strip you bare with good intentions. She sighed, let her head fall back, her eyes close. I didn't want to arrest de Blas, Rourke. I wanted to kill him. I wanted to kill him with my own hands because of what happened to me. I let it get personal. You did your job. Yeah, I did my job. And I'll keep doing it. But it wasn't the job she was thinking of now. It was life, hers and his. Rourke, you've got to know I've got some bad stuff inside. It's like a virus that sneaks around the system, pops out when your resistance is low. I'm not a good bet. I like long odds. He lifted her hand, kissed it. Why don't we see it through? Find out if we can both win. I've never told anybody before. Did it help? I don't know. Maybe. Christ, I'm so tired. You could lean on me. He slipped an arm around her, nestled her head in the curve of his shoulder. For a little while, she murmured. Until we get to New York. For a little while, then. He pressed his lips to her hair and hoped she would sleep. Chapter 19. De Blas wouldn't talk. His lawyers put the muzzle on him early, and they put it on tight. The interrogation process was slow, and it was tedious. There were times Eve thought he would burst when the temper that reddened his face would tip the scales in her favor. She'd stopped denying it was personal. She didn't want a tricky media blitz trial. She wanted a confession. You were engaged in an incestuous affair with your granddaughter, Sharon de Blas. My client has not confirmed those allegations. Eve ignored the lawyer, watched de Blas's face. I have here a transcript of a portion of Sharon de Blas's diary, dated on the night of her murder. She shoved the paper across the table. De Blas's lawyer, a trim, tidy man with a neat sandy beard and mild blue eyes, picked it up, studied it. Whatever his reaction was, he hid it behind cool indifference. This proves nothing, Lieutenant, as I'm sure you know. The destructive fantasies of a dead woman. A woman of dubious reputation who has long been estranged from her family. There's a pattern here, Senator de Blas. Eve stubbornly continued to address the accused rather than his knight-at-arms. You sexually abused your daughter, Catherine. Preposterous, de Blas blurted out before his attorney lifted a hand to silence him. I have a statement, signed and verified before witnesses from Congresswoman Catherine de Blas. Eve offered it, and the lawyer nipped it out of her fingers before the senator could move. He scanned it, then folded his carefully manicured hands over it. You may not be aware, Lieutenant, that there is an unfortunate history of mental disorder here. Senator de Blas's wife is even now under observation for a breakdown. We are aware. She spared the lawyer a glance, and we will be investigating her condition and the cause of it. Congresswoman de Blas has also been treated for symptoms of depression, paranoia, and stress, the lawyer continued in the same neutral tone. If she has, Senator de Blas, we'll find that the roots of it are due to your systematic and continued abuse of her as a child. You were in New York on the night of Sharon de Blas's murder, she said, switching gears smoothly. Not, as you previously claimed, in East Washington. Before the lawyer could block her, she leaned forward, her eyes steady on de Blas's face. Let me tell you how it went down. You took your private shuttle, paying the pilot and the flight engineer to doctor the log. You went to Sharon's apartment, had sex with her, recorded it for your own purposes. You took a weapon with you, a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson antique. And because she taunted you, because she threatened you, because you couldn't take the pressure of possible exposure any longer, you shot her. You shot her 3 times. In the head, in the heart, and in the genitalia. She kept the words coming fast, kept her face close to his. It pleased her that she could smell his sweat. The last shot was pretty clever. Messed up any chance for us to verify sexual activity. You ripped her open at the crotch. Maybe it was symbolic. Maybe it was self-preservation. Why'd you take the gun with you? Had you planned it? Had you decided to end it once and for all? De Blas's eyes darted left and right. His breathing grew hard and fast. My client does not acknowledge ownership of the weapon in question. Your client's scum. The lawyer puffed up. Lieutenant Dallas, you're speaking of a United States senator. That makes him elected scum. It shocked you, didn't it, Senator? All the blood, the noise, the way the gun jerked in your hand. Maybe you hadn't really believed you could go through with it. Not when push came to shove and you had to pull the trigger. But once you had, there was no going back. You had to cover it up. She would have ruined you. She never would have let you have peace. She wasn't like Catherine. Sharon wouldn't fade into the background and suffer all the shame and the guilt and the fear. She used it against you, so you had to kill her. Then you had to cover your tracks. Lieutenant Dallas! She never took her eyes from De Blas, and ignoring the lawyer's warning, kept beating at him. That was exciting, wasn't it? You could get away with it. You're a United States senator, the victim's grandfather. Who would believe it of you? So you arranged her on the bed, indulged yourself, your ego. You could do it again, and why not? The killing had stirred something in you. What better way to hide than to make it seem as if there was some maniac at large? She waited while De Blas reached for a glass of water and drank thirstily. There was a maniac at large. You printed out the note, slipped it under her, and you dressed, calmer now, but excited. You set the link to call the cops at 2:55. You needed time to go down and fix the security tapes. Then you got back on your shuttle, flew back to East Washington, and waited to play the outraged grandfather. Through it all, De Blas said nothing, but a muscle jerked in his cheek and his eyes couldn't find a place to land.
"That's a fascinating story, Lieutenant," the lawyer said. "But it remains that. A story. A supposition. A desperate attempt by the police department to fight their way out of a difficult situation with the media and the people of New York. And, of course, it's perfect timing that such a ridiculous and damaging accusation should be levied against the senator just as his morals bill is coming up for debate."
"How did you pick the other two? How did you select Lola Starr and Georgie Castle? Have you already picked the fourth, the fifth, the sixth? Do you think you could have stopped there? Could you have stopped when it made you feel so powerful, so invincible, so righteous?" De Blas wasn't red now. He was gray, and his breathing was harsh and choppy. When he reached for a glass again, his hand jerked and sent it rolling to the floor.
"This interview is over."
The lawyer stood, helped De Blas to his feet.
"My client's health is precarious. He requires medical attention immediately."
"Your client's a murderer. He'll get plenty of medical attention in a penal colony for the rest of his life." She pressed a button. When the doors of the interrogation room opened, a uniform stepped in. "Call the MTs," she ordered. "The senator's feeling a little stressed." "It's gonna get worse," she warned, turning back to De Blas. "I haven't even gotten started." 2 hours later, after filing reports and meeting with the prosecuting attorney, Eve fought her way through traffic. She had read a good portion of Sharon De Blas's diaries. It was something she needed to set aside for now, the pictures of a twisted man and how he had turned a young girl into a woman almost as unbalanced as he. Because she knew it could have been, all too easily, her story. Choices were there to be taken, she thought, brooding. Sharon's had killed her. She wanted to blow off some steam.
go over the events step by step with someone who would listen, appreciate, support. Someone who, for a little while, would stand between her and the ghosts of what was and what could have been. She headed for Rourke's. When the call came through on her car link, she prayed it wasn't a summons back to duty. "Dallas!" "Hey, kid!" It was Feeney's tired face on screen. "I just watched the interrogation discs. Good job. Didn't get as far as I'd like, fencing with the damn lawyer. I'm gonna break him, Feeney. I swear it." "Yeah, my money's on you. But, I gotta tell you something that's not gonna go down well. De Blas had a little heart blip. Christ, he's not gonna code out on us. No, no, they medicated him. Some talk about getting him a new one next week." "Good." She blew out a stream of breath. "I want him to live a long time, behind bars. We've got a strong case. The prosecutor's ready to canonize you. But, in the meantime, he's sprung." She hit the brakes. A volley of testy horn blasts behind her had her whipping over to the edge of 10th and blocking the turning lane. "What the hell do you mean he's sprung?" Feeney winced, as much in empathy as reaction. "Released on his own recognizance. U.S. Senator, lifetime of patriotic duty, salt of the earth, dinky heart, and a judge in his pocket. Fuck that." She pulled her hair until the pain equaled her frustration. "We got him on murder, 3 counts. Prosecutor said she was going for no bail. She got shot down. De Blas's lawyer made a speech that would have wrung tears from a stone and had a corpse saluting the flag. De Blas is back in East Washington by now, under doctor's orders to rest. He got a 36-hour hold on further interrogation. Shit!" She punched the wheel with the heel of her hand. "It's not going to make any difference," she said grimly. "He can play the ill elder statesman. He can do a tap dance at the fucking Lincoln Memorial. I've got him." "Commander's worried that the time lag will give De Blas an opportunity to pool his resources. He wants you back working with the prosecutor, going over everything we've got by 0800 tomorrow. I'll be there, Feeney. He's not going to slip out of this noose. Just make sure you've got the knot nice and tight, kid. See you at 8. "Yeah." Steaming, she swung back into traffic. She considered going home, burying herself in the chain of evidence, but she was 5 minutes from Rourke's. Eve opted to use him as a sounding board. She could count on him to play devil's advocate if she needed it, to point out flaws. And, she admitted, to calm her down so that she could think without all these violent emotions getting in the way. She couldn't afford those emotions, couldn't afford to let Catherine's face pop into her head as it had time and time again. The shame and the fear and the guilt. It was impossibly hard to separate it. She knew she wanted De Blas to pay every bit as much for Catherine as for the 3 dead women. She was cleared through Rourke's gate, drove quickly up the sloped driveway. Her pulse began to thud as she raced up the steps. Idiot, she told herself, like some hormonal plague teenager. But she was smiling when Somerset opened the door. "I need to see Rourke," she said, brushing by him. "I'm sorry, Lieutenant. Rourke isn't at home." "Oh." The sense of deflation made her feel ridiculous. "Where is he?" Somerset's face pokered up. "I believe he's in a meeting. He was forced to cancel an important trip to Europe and was therefore compelled to work late." "Right." The cat pranced down the steps and immediately began twining himself through Eve's legs. She picked him up, stroked his underbelly. "When do you expect him?" "Rourke's time is his business, Lieutenant. I don't presume to expect him. Look, pal, I haven't been twisting Rourke's arm to get him to spend his valuable time with me. So why don't you pull the stick out of your ass and tell me why you act like I'm some sort of embarrassing rodent whenever I show up?" Shock turned Somerset's face paper white. "I am not comfortable with crude manners, Lieutenant Dallas. Obviously, you are. They fit me like old slippers." Indeed. Somerset drew himself up. Rourke is a man of taste, of style, of influence. He has the ear of presidents and kings. He has escorted women of unimpeachable breeding and pedigree. And I've got lousy breeding and no pedigree. She would have laughed if the barb hadn't struck so close to the heart. It seems even a man like Rourke can find the occasional mongrel appealing. Tell him I took the cat, she added, and walked out. It helped to tell herself Somerset was an insufferable snob, and the cat's silent interest as she vented on the drive home was curiously soothing. She didn't need some tight-assed butler's approval. As if in agreement, the cat walked over onto her lap and began to knead her thighs. She winced a little as his claws nipped through her trousers, but didn't move him aside. I guess we've got to come up with a name for you. Never had a pet before, she murmured. I don't know what Georgie called you, but we'll start fresh. Don't worry, we won't go for anything wimpy like Fluffy. She pulled into her garage, parked, saw the yellow light blipping on the wall of her spot, a warning that her payment on the space was overdue. If it went red, the barricade would engage and she'd be screwed. She swore a little, more from habit than heat. She hadn't had time to pay bills, damn it, and now realized she could face an evening of catching up playing the credit juggle with her bank account. Hauling the cat under her arm, she walked to the elevator. Fred, maybe. She tilted her head, stared into his unreadable two-toned eyes. No, you don't look like Fred. Jesus, you must weigh 20 pounds. Shifting her bag, she stepped into the car. We'll give the name some thought, Tubbo. The minute she set him down inside the apartment, he darted for the kitchen. Taking her responsibilities as pet owner seriously, and deciding it was one way to postpone crunching figures, Eve followed and came up with a saucer of milk and some leftover Chinese that smelled slightly off. The cat apparently had no delicacies when it came to food, and attacked the meal with gusto. She watched him a moment, letting her mind drift. She'd wanted Rourke, needed him. That was something else she'd have to give some thought to. She didn't know how seriously to take the fact that he claimed to be in love with her. Love meant different things to different people. It had never been a part of her life. She poured herself a half glass of wine, then merely frowned into it. She felt something for him, certainly. Something new, and uncomfortably strong. Still, it was best to let things coast as they were. Decisions made quickly were almost always regretted quickly. Why the hell hadn't he been home? She set the untouched wine aside, dragged a hand through her hair. That was the biggest problem with getting used to someone, she thought. You were lonely when they weren't there. She had work to do, she reminded herself. A case to close, a little Russian roulette with her credit status. Maybe she'd indulge in a long hot bath, letting some of the stress steam away before prepping for her morning meeting with the prosecutor. She left the cat gulping sweet and sour and went to the bedroom. Instincts, sluggish after a long day and personal questions, kicked in a moment too late. Her hand was on her weapon before she fully registered the move, but it dropped away slowly as she stared into the long barrel of the revolver. Colt, she thought, 45, the kind that tamed the American West, 6 bullets at a time. This isn't going to help your boss's case, Rockman. I disagree. He stepped from behind the door, kept the gun pointed at her heart. Take your weapon out slowly, Lieutenant, and drop it. She kept her eyes on his. The laser was fast, but it wouldn't be faster than a cocked 45. At this range, the hole it would put in her would make a nasty impression. She dropped her weapon. Kick it toward me. Ah! He smiled pleasantly as her hand slid toward her pocket and the communicator. I prefer keeping this between you and me. Good, he said, when her unit hit the floor. Some people might find your loyalty to the senator admirable, Rockman. I find it stupid. Lying to give him an alibi is one thing. Threatening a police officer is another. You're a remarkably bright woman, Lieutenant. Still, you make remarkably foolish mistakes. Loyalty isn't an issue here. I'd like you to remove your jacket. She kept her moves slow, her eyes on his. When the jacket was off one shoulder, she engaged the recorder in its pocket. If holding me at gunpoint isn't due to loyalty to Senator de Blas, Rockman, what is it? It's a matter of self-preservation and great pleasure. I'd hoped for the opportunity to kill you, Lieutenant, but didn't see clearly how to work it into the plan. What plan is that? Why don't you sit down? The side of the bed. Take off your shoes and we'll chat. My shoes? Yes, please. This gives me my first and, I'm sure, only opportunity to discuss what I've managed to accomplish. Your shoes? She sat, choosing the side of the bed nearest her link. You've been working with de Blas through it all, haven't you? You want to ruin him. He could have been president and eventually the chair of the World Federation of Nations. The tide's swinging, and he could have swept it along and sat in the Oval Office. Beyond. With you at his side? Of course. And with me at his side, we would have taken the country, then the world, in a new direction. The right direction. One of strong morals, strong defense. She took her time, letting one shoe drop before unstrapping the other. Defense? Like your old pals in SafeNet? His smile was hard, his eyes bright. This country has been run by diplomats for too long. Our generals discuss and negotiate rather than command. With my help, de Blas would have changed that. But you were determined to bring him down and me with him. There's no chance for the presidency now. He's a murderer, a child abuser, a statesman, Rockman interrupted. You'll never bring him to trial. He'll be brought to trial, and he'll be convicted. Killing me won't stop it. No, but it will destroy your case against him. Posthumously on both parts. You see, when I left him less than 2 hours ago, Senator de Blas was in his office in East Washington. I stood by him as he chose a .457 Magnum, a very powerful gun, and I watched as he put the barrel into his mouth and died like a patriot. Christ! It jolted her, the image of it. Suicide. The warrior falling on his sword. Admiration shone in Rockman's voice. I told him it was the only way, and he agreed. He would never have been able to tolerate the humiliation. When his body is found, when yours is found, the senator's reputation will be intact once again. It will be proven that he was dead hours before you. He couldn't have killed you. And as the method will be exactly as the other murders, and as there will be two more, as promised, the evidence against him will cease to matter. He'll be mourned. I'll lead the charge of fury and insult, and step into his bloody shoes. This isn't about politics. God damn you! She rose then, braced for the blow. She was grateful he didn't use the gun, but the back of his hand to knock her back. She turned with it, fell heavily onto the night table. The glass she'd left there shattered to the floor. Get up. She moaned a little. Indeed, the flash of pain had her cheeks singing and her vision blurred. She pushed herself up, turned, careful to keep her body in front of the link she'd switched on manually. What good is it going to do to kill me, Rockman? It will do me a great deal of good. You were the spearhead of the investigation. You're sexually involved with a man who was an early suspect. Your reputation and your motives will come under close scrutiny after your death. It's always a mistake to give a woman authority. She wiped the blood from her mouth. Don't like women, Rockman. They have their uses. But under it all, they're whores. Perhaps you didn't sell your body to Rourke, but he bought you. Your murder won't really break the pattern I've established. You've established? Did you really believe de Blas was capable of planning out and executing such a meticulous series of murders? He waited until he saw that she understood. Yes, he killed Sharon. An impulse. I wasn't even aware he was considering it. He panicked afterward. You were there. You were with him the night he killed Sharon. I was waiting for him in the car. I always accompanied him on his trysts with her, driving him so that only I, who he trusted, would be involved. His own granddaughter. Eve didn't dare turn to be certain she was transmitting. Didn't it disgust you? She disgusted me, Lieutenant. She used his weakness. Every man's entitled to one, but she used it, exploited it, then threatened him. After she was dead, I realized it was for the best. She would have waited until he was president, then twisted the knife. So you helped him cover it up. Of course. Rockman lifted his shoulders. I'm glad we have this opportunity. It was frustrating for me not to be able to take credit. I'm delighted to share it with you. Ego, she remembered. Not just intelligence, but ego and vanity. You had to think fast, she commented. And you did. Fast and brilliantly. Yes, his smile spread. He called me on the car, Link. Told me to come up quickly. He was half mad with fear. If I hadn't calmed him, she might have succeeded in ruining him. You can blame her? She was a whore. A dead whore. He shrugged it off, but held the gun steady. I gave the senator a sedative, and I cleaned up the mess. As I explained to him, it was necessary to make Sharon only part of the whole, to use her failings, her pathetic choice of profession. It was a simple matter to doctor the security disks. The senator's penchant for recording his sexual activities gave me the idea to use that as part of the pattern. Yes, she said through numbed lips. That was clever. I wiped the place down, wiped the gun. Since he'd been sensible enough not to use one that was registered, I left it behind, again establishing pattern. So you used it, Eve said quietly. Use him? Use Sharon. Only fools waste opportunities. He was more himself once we were away, Rockman mused. I was able to outline the rest of my plan, using Simpson to apply pressure, leak information. It was unfortunate that the senator didn't remember until later to tell me about Sharon's diaries. I had to risk going back. But, as we know now, she was clever enough to hide them well. You killed Lola Starr and Georgie Castle. You killed them to cover up the first murder. Yes, but unlike the senator. I enjoyed it, from beginning to end. It was a simple matter to select them, choose names, locations. It was a little difficult at the moment to enjoy the fact that she'd been right and her computer wrong. Two killers after all. You didn't know them? You didn't even know them? Did you think I would? He laughed at that. Who they were hardly mattered. Only what? Whores offend me. Women who spread their legs to weaken a man offend me. You offend me, Lieutenant. Why the disks? Where the hell was Feeney, she thought. Why wasn't a roving unit breaking down her door right now? Why did you send me the disks? She said. I liked watching you scramble around like a mouse after cheese. A woman who believed she could think like a man. I pointed you at Rourke, but you let him talk you onto your back. All too typical. You disappointed me. You were emotional, Lieutenant. Over the deaths, over that little girl you didn't save. But you got lucky. Which is why you're about to become very unlucky. He sidestepped over to the dresser where he had a camera waiting. He switched it on. Take off your clothes. You can kill me, she said as her stomach began to churn, but you're not going to rape me. You'll do exactly what I want you to do. They always do. He lowered the gun until it pointed at her midsection. With the others, it was a shot to the head first. Instant death, probably painless. Do you have any idea what sort of pain you'll experience with a 45 slug in your gut? You'll be begging me to kill you. His eyes lit brilliantly. Strip. Eve's hands fell to her sides. She'd faced the pain, but not the nightmare. Neither of them saw the cat slink into the room. Your choice, Lieutenant, Rockman said, then jerked when the cat brushed between his legs. Eve sprang forward, head low, and used the force of her body to drive him against the wall. Chapter 20 Feeney stopped on his way back from the eatery, a half a soy burger in his hand. He loitered by the coffee dispenser, gossiping with a couple of cops on robbery detail. They swapped stories, and Feeney decided he could use one more cup of coffee before calling it a night. He nearly bypassed his office altogether, with visions of an evening in front of the TV screen and a nice cold beer swimming in his head. His wife might even be up for a little cuddle if he was lucky. But he was a creature of habit. He breezed in to make certain his precious computer was secured for the night, and heard Eve's voice. "Hey, Dallas, what brings you..." He stopped, scanning his empty office. "Working too hard," he muttered, then heard her again. "You were with him. You were with him the night he killed Sharon." "Oh, my Jesus." He could see little on the screen. Eve's back, the side of the bed. Rockman was blocked from view, but the audio was clear. Feeney was already praying when he called dispatch. Eve heard the cat's annoyed screech when her foot stomped his tail. Heard, too, the clatter as the gun hit the floor. Rockman had her in height. He had her in weight. And he'd recovered from her full body slam too quickly. He proved graphically that he was military trained. She fought viciously, unable to restrain herself to the cool, efficient moves of hand to hand. She used nails and teeth. The shortened blow to the ribs stole her breath. She knew she was going down, and she made sure she took him with her. They hit the floor hard, and though she rolled, he came down on top of her. Light starred behind her eyes when her head rapped hard against the floor. His hand was around her throat, bruising her windpipe. She went for the eyes, missed, and raked furrows down his cheek that had him howling like an animal. If he'd used his other hand for a blow to the face, he might have stunned her, but he was too focused on reaching the gun. Her stiff-handed chop to his elbow had his hand shaking from her throat. Painfully gasping for air, she scrambled with him for the gun. His hand closed over it first. Rourke tucked a package under his arm as he walked into the lobby of Eve's building. He enjoyed the fact that she'd come to him. It was a habit he didn't intend to see her break. He thought, now that she'd closed her case, he could talk her into taking a couple of days off. He had an island in the West Indies he thought she'd enjoy. He pressed her intercom and was smiling over the image of swimming naked with her in clear blue water, making love under a hot white sun when all hell broke loose behind him. "Get the hell out of the way!" Feeney came in like a steamroller, a dozen uniforms in his wake. "Police business!" "Eve." Rourke's blood drained, even as he muscled his way onto the elevator. Feeney ignored him and barked into his communicator. "Secure all exits! Get those fucking sharpshooters in position!" Rourke fisted his hands uselessly at his sides. "De Blas?" "Rockman," Feeney corrected, counting every beat of his own heart. "He's got her. Stay out of the way, Rourke." "The fuck I will." Feeney flicked his eyes over, measured. No way he was going to spare a couple of cops to restrain a civilian, and he had a hunch this civilian would go to the wall, as he would for Eve. "Then do what I tell you." They heard the gunshot as the elevator doors opened. Rourke was two steps ahead of Feeney when he rammed Eve's apartment door. He swore, reared back. They hit it together. The pain was like being stabbed with ice. Then it was gone, numbed with fury. Eve clamped her hand over the wrist of his gun hand, dug her short nails into his flesh. Rockman's face was close to hers, his body pinning her in an obscene parody of love. His wrist was slippery with his own blood where she clawed at it. She swore as she lost her grip, as he began to smile. "You fight like a woman." He shook his hair back from his eyes, and the blood from his torn cheek welled red. "I'm going to rape you. The last thing you'll know before I kill you is that you're no better than a whore." She sagged, and aroused with victory, he ripped at her blouse. His smile shattered when she pumped her fist into his mouth. Blood splattered over her like warm rain. She hit him again, heard the crunch of cartilage as his nose fountained more blood. Quick as a snake, she scissored up. And again, she jabbed at him, an elbow to the jaw, torn knuckles to the face, screaming and cursing as if her words would pummel him as well as her fists. She didn't hear the battering of the door, the crash of it falling in. With rage behind her, she shoved Rockman to his back, straddled him, and continued to plunge her fists into his face. "Eve! Sweet God!" It took Rourke and Feeney together to haul her off. She fought, snarling, until Rourke pressed her face into his shoulder. "Stop! It's done! It's over!" "He was going to kill me. He killed Lola and Georgie. He was going to kill me, but he was going to rape me first." She pulled back, wiped at the blood and sweat on her face. "That's where he made a mistake. Sit down." His hands were trembling and slicked with blood when he eased her onto the bed. "You're hurt." "Not yet. It'll start in a minute." She gathered in a breath, let it out. She was a cop, damn it, she reminded herself. She was a cop, and she'd act like one. "You got the transmission," she said to Feeney. "Yeah." He took out a handkerchief to wipe his clammy face. "Then what the hell took you so long?" She managed a ghost of a smile. "You look a little upset, Feeney." "Shit! All in a day's work." He flipped on his communicator. "Situation under control. We need an ambulance." "I'm not going to any health center." "Not for you, champ. For him." He glanced down at Rockman, who managed a weak groan. "Once you clean him up, book him for the murders of Lola Starr and Georgie Castle." "You sure about that?" Her legs were a bit wobbly, but she rose and picked up her jacket. "Got it all." She held out the recorder. "DeBlasted Sharon, but our boy here is accessory after the fact, and I want him charged with the attempted rape and murder of a police officer. Toss in B&E for the hell of it." "You got it." Feeney tucked the recorder into his pocket. "Christ, Dallas, you're a mess." "I guess I am." "Get him out of here, will you, Feeney?" "Sure thing." "Let me help you." Rourke bent down, lifted Rockman by the lapels. He jerked the man up, steadied him. "Look at me, Rockman. Vision clear?" Rockman blinked blood out of his eyes. "I can see you." "Good." Rourke's arm shot up, quick as a bullet, and his fist connected with Rockman's already battered face. "Oops," Feeney said mildly, when Rockman crumbled to the floor again. "Guess he's not too steady on his feet." He bent over him, slipped on the cuffs. "Maybe a couple of you boys ought to carry him out. Hold the ambulance for me. I'll ride with him." He took out an evidence bag, slipped the gun into it. "Nice piece. Ivory handle. Bet it packs a wallop." "Tell me about it." Her hand went automatically to her arm. Feeney stopped admiring the gun and gaped at her. "Shit, Dallas, you shot?" "I don't know." She said it almost dreamily, surprised when Rourke ripped off the sleeve of her already tattered shirt. "Hey!" "Grazed her." His voice was hollow. He ripped the sleeve again, used it to staunch the wound. "She needs to be looked at." "I figure I can leave that to you," Feeney remarked. "You might want to stay somewhere else tonight, Dallas. Let a team come in and clean this up for you.
Yeah.
She smiled as the cat leaped onto the bed.
Maybe.
He whistled through his teeth.
Busy day.
It comes and goes, she murmured, stroking the cat. Galahad, she thought. Her white knight.
See you around, kid.
Yeah.
Thanks, Feeny.
Determined to get through, Rourke crouched in front of her. He waited until Feeny's whistling faded away.
Eve, you're in shock.
Sort of.
I'm starting to hurt, though.
You need a doctor. She moved her shoulders. I could use a pain pill, and I need to clean up.
She looked down at herself, took inventory calmly. Her blouse was torn, spotted with blood. Her hands were a mess, ripped and swollen knuckles. She couldn't quite make a fist. 100 bruises were making themselves known, and the wound on her arm where the bullet had nicked it was turning to fire.
I don't think it's as bad as it looks, she decided, but I'd better check.
When she started to rise, he picked her up.
I kind of like when you carry me. Makes me all wobbly inside. Then I feel stupid about it after.
There's stuff in the bathroom.
Since he wanted to see the damage for himself, he carried her in, set her on the toilet. He found strong police-issue pain pills in a nearly empty medicine cabinet. He offered one, and water, before dampening a cloth. She pushed at her hair with her good arm.
I forgot to tell Feeny. De Blas is dead.
Suicide. What they used to call eating your gun.
Hell of a phrase.
Don't worry about it now.
Rourke worked on the bullet wound first. It was a nasty gash, but the bleeding had already slowed. Any competent MT could close it in a matter of minutes. It didn't make his hands any steadier.
There were 2 killers. She frowned at the far wall. That was the problem. I clicked onto it, but then I let it go. Data indicated low probability percentage. Stupid.
Rourke rinsed out the cloth and started on her face.
He was deliriously relieved that most of the blood on it wasn't hers. Her mouth was cut, her left eye already beginning to swell. There was raw color along her cheekbone. He managed to take a full, almost easy breath.
You're going to have a hell of a bruise.
I've had them before.
The medication was seeping in, turning pain into a mist. She only smiled when he stripped her to the waist and began checking for other injuries.
You've got great hands. I love when you touch me.
Nobody ever touched me like that, did I tell you?
No.
And he doubted she'd remember, she was telling him now. He'd make sure to remind her.
And you're so pretty.
So pretty, she repeated, lifting a bleeding hand to his face.
I keep wondering what you're doing here.
He took her hand, wrapped a cloth gently around it.
I've asked myself the same question.
She grinned foolishly, let herself float. Need to file my report, she thought hazily.
Soon.
You don't really think we're going to make anything out of this, do you?
Rourke and the cop?
I guess we'll have to find out.
There were plenty of bruises, but the bluing along her ribs worried him most.
Okay. Maybe I could lie down now.
Can we go to your place? 'Cause Feeny's going to send a team in to record the scene and all that. If I could just take a little nap before I go in to make my report.
You're going to the closest health center.
No, uh-uh. Can't stand them. Hospitals, health centers, doctors.
She gave him a glassy-eyed smile and lifted her arms.
Let me sleep in your bed, Rourke, okay? The great big one up on the platform under the sky.
For lack of anything closer to hand, he took off his jacket and slipped it around her. When he picked her up again, her head lolled on his shoulder.
Don't forget Galahad.
The cat saved my life.
Who'd have thought?
Then he gets caviar for the first hole of his 9 lives.
Rourke snapped his fingers,
and the cat fell happily into step.
"Door's broken," Eve chuckled as Rourke stepped around it and into the hall. "Landlord's gonna be pissed. But I know how to get around him."
She pressed a kiss to Rourke's throat. "I'm glad it's over," she said, sighing. "I'm glad you're here. Be nice if you stuck around."
"Count on it."
Shifting her, he bent down and retrieved the package he'd dropped in the hallway in his race to her door. There was a fresh pound of coffee inside. He figured he'd need it as a bribe when she woke up and found herself in a hospital bed.
"Don't want to dream tonight," she murmured as she drifted off.
He stepped into the elevator, the cat at his feet.
"No."
He brushed his lips over Eve's hair.
"No dreams tonight."
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Glory in Death, Book 2 of the In Death series, free.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Naked in Death by J.D. Robb. Copyright 1995 by Nora Roberts. Read by Susan Erickson. Performance copyright 2004 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
And now, a free preview of Glory in Death, Book 2 in the In Death series.
Fame then was cheap, and they have kept it since by being dead. Dryden. Choked with ambition of the meaner sort. Shakespeare. Chapter 1. The dead were her business. She lived with them, worked with them, studied them. She dreamed of them. And because that didn't seem to be enough, in some deep, secret chamber of her heart, she mourned for them. A decade as a cop had toughened her, given her a cold, clinical, and often cynical eye toward death and its many causes. It made scenes such as the one she viewed now, on a rainy night on a dark street nasty with litter, almost too usual. But still, she felt. Murder no longer shocked, but it continued to repel. The woman had been lovely once. Long trails of her golden hair spread out like rays on the dirty sidewalk. Her eyes, wide and still with that distressed expression death often left in them, were a deep purple against cheeks bloodlessly white and wet with rain. She'd worn an expensive suit, the same rich color as her eyes. The jacket was neatly buttoned in contrast to the jerked-up skirt that exposed her trim thighs. Jewels glittered on her fingers, at her ears, against the sleek lapel of the jacket. A leather bag with a gold clasp lay near her outstretched fingers. Her throat had been viciously slashed. Lieutenant Eve Dallas crouched down beside Death and studied it carefully. The sights and scents were familiar, but each time, every time, there was something new. Both victim and killer left their own imprint, their own style, and made murder personal. The scene had already been recorded. Police sensors and the more intimate touch of the privacy screen were in place to keep the curious barricaded and to preserve the murder site. Street traffic, such as it was in this area, had been diverted. Air traffic was light at this hour of the night and caused little distraction. The backbeat from the music of the sex club across the street thrummed busily in the air, punctuated by the occasional howl from the celebrants. The colored lights from its revolving sign pulsed against the screen, splashing garish colors over the victim's body. Eve could have ordered it shut down for the night, but it seemed an unnecessary hassle. Even in 2058, with the gun ban, Even though genetic testing often weeded out the more violent hereditary traits before they could bloom, murder happened. And it happened with enough regularity that the fun seekers across the street would be miffed at the idea of being moved along for such a minor inconvenience as death. A uniform stood by, continuing video and audio. Beside the screen, a couple of forensic sweepers huddled against the driving rain and talked shop and sports. They hadn't bothered to look at the body yet, hadn't recognized her. Was it worse? Eve wondered, and her eyes hardened as she watched the rain wash through blood. When you knew the victim? She'd had only a professional relationship with prosecuting attorney Cicely Towers, but enough of one to have formed a strong opinion of a strong woman. A successful woman, Eve thought. A fighter. One who had pursued justice doggedly. Had she been pursuing it here, in this miserable neighborhood? With a sigh, Eve reached over and opened the elegant and expensive bag to corroborate her visual ID. Cicely Towers, she said for the recorder. Female, age 45, divorced. Resides 2132 East 83rd, number 61B. No robbery. Victim still wearing jewelry. Approximately, she flipped through the wallet, 20 in hard bills, 50 credit tokens, 6 credit cards left at scene. No overt signs of struggle or sexual assault. She looked back at the woman sprawled on the sidewalk. What the hell were you doing out here, Towers? She wondered. Here, away from the power center. Away from your classy home address. And dressed for business, she thought. Eve knew Cicely Towers' authoritative wardrobe well, had admired it in court and at City Hall. Strong colors, always camera-ready, coordinated accessories, always with a feminine touch. Eve rose, rubbed absently at the wet knees of her jeans. Homicide, she said briefly. Bagger. It was no surprise to Eve that the media had caught the scent of murder and were already hunting it down before she'd reached the glossy building where Cicely Towers had lived. Several remotes and eager reporters were camped on the pristine sidewalk. The fact that it was 3 a.m. and raining buckets didn't deter them. In their eyes, Eve saw the wolf gleam. The story was the prey. Ratings, the trophy. She could ignore the cameras that swung in her direction. The questions shot out like stinging darts. She was almost used to the loss of her anonymity. The case she had investigated and closed during the past winter had catapulted her into the public eye. The case, she thought now as she aimed a steely glance at a reporter who had the nerve to block her path, and her relationship with Rourke. The case had been murder, and violent death, however exciting, soon passed out of the public interest. But Rourke was always news.
What do you have, Lieutenant? Do you have a suspect? Is there a motive? Can you confirm the prosecuting attorney Towers was decapitated?
Eve slowed her ground-eating stride briefly and swept her gaze over the huddle of soggy, feral-eyed reporters. She was wet, tired, and revolted, but she was careful. She'd learned that if you gave the media any part of yourself, it squeezed it, twisted it, and wrung it dry.
The department has no comment at this time other than the investigation into prosecuting attorney Towers' death is proceeding. Are you in charge of the case?
I'm primary, she said shortly, then swung between the two uniforms guarding the entrance to the building. The lobby was full of flowers, long banks and flows of fragrant, colorful blooms that made her think of spring and some exotic place. The island, where she had spent 3 dazzling days with Rourke, while she'd recovered from a bullet wound and exhaustion. She didn't have time to smile over the memory, as she would have under other circumstances, but flashed her badge and moved across the terracotta tiles to the first elevator. There were more uniforms inside. 2 were behind the lobby desk, handling the computerized security. Others watched the entrance. Still others stood by the elevator tubes. It was more manpower than necessary, but as PA, Towers had been one of their own.
Her apartment secured? Eve asked the closest cop. Yes, sir. No one's been in or out since your call at 0210. I'll want copies of the security disks.
She stepped into the elevator. For the last 24 hours, to start.
She glanced down at the name on his uniform. I want a detail of 6 for door-to-doors, beginning at 700, Biggs. Floor 61, she ordered, and the elevator's clear doors closed silently. She stepped out into the 61st's lush carpet and museum quiet. The halls were narrow, as they were in most multi-habitation buildings erected within the last half-century. The walls were a flawless creamy white, with mirrors at rigid intervals to lend the illusion of space. Space was no problem within the units, Eve mused. There were only 3 on the entire floor. She decoded the lock on 61B using her police and security MasterCard and stepped into quiet elegance. Cicely Towers had done well for herself, Eve decided, and she liked to live well. As Eve took the pocket video from her field kit and clipped it onto her jacket, she scanned the living area. She recognized 2 paintings by a prominent 21st century artist hanging on the pale rose-toned wall above a wide U-shaped conversation area done in muted stripes of pinks and greens. It was her association with Rourke that had her identifying the paintings and the easy wealth in the simplicity of decor and selected pieces. How much does a PA pull in per year, she wondered, as the camera recorded the scene. Everything was tidy, meticulously so. But then, Eve reflected, from what she knew of Towers, the woman had been meticulous, in her dress, in her work, in maintaining her privacy. So, what had an elegant, smart, and meticulous woman been doing in a nasty neighborhood in the middle of a nasty night? Eve walked through the room. The floor was white wood and shone like a mirror beneath lovely rugs that echoed the dominant colors of the room. On a table were framed holograms of children in varying stages of growth, from babyhood on through to the college years. A boy and girl, both pretty, both beaming. Odd, Eve thought. She'd worked with Towers on countless cases over the years. Had she known the woman had children? With a shake of her head, she walked over to the small computer built into a stylish workstation in the corner of the room. Again, she used her MasterCard to engage it. List appointments for Cicely Towers, May 2. Eve's lips pursed as she read the data. An hour at an upscale private health club prior to a full day in court, followed by 6 o'clock with a prominent defense attorney, then a dinner engagement. Eve's brow lifted. Dinner with George Hammett. Rourke had dealings with Hammett, Eve remembered. She'd met him now 2 times and knew him to be a charming and canny man who made his rather exorbitant living with transportation. And Hammett was Cicely Towers' final appointment of the day. Print, she murmured, and tucked the hard copy in her bag. She tried the telelink next, requesting all incoming and outgoing calls for the past 48 hours. It was likely she would have to dig deeper, but for now, she ordered a recording of the calls, tucked the disk away, and began a long, careful search of the apartment. By 5 a.m., her eyes were gritty and her head ached. The single hour's sleep she had managed to tuck in between sex and murder was beginning to wear on her. According to known information, she said wearily for the recorder, the victim lived alone. No indication from initial investigation to the contrary. No indication that the victim left her apartment other than voluntarily, and no record of an appointment that would explain why the victim traveled to the location of the murder. Primary has secured data from her computer and telelink for further investigation. Door-to-doors will begin at 0700, and building security disks will be confiscated. Primary is leaving victim's residence and will be en route to victim's offices in City Hall. Lieutenant Dallas, Eve, 0508. Eve switched off the audio and video, secured her field kit, and headed out. It was past 10 when she made it back to Cop Central. In concession to her hollow stomach, she zipped through the eatery, disappointed but not surprised to find most of the good stuff long gone by that hour. She settled for a soy muffin, and what the eatery liked to pretend was coffee. As bad as it was, she downed everything before she settled in her office. It was just as well, as her link beeped instantly. Lieutenant!
She bit back a sigh as she stared into Whitney's wide, grim-eyed face. Commander?
My office. Now.
There wasn't time to close her mouth before the screen went blank. The hell with it, she thought. She scrubbed her hands over her face, then through her short, choppy brown hair. There went any chance of checking her messages, of calling Rourke to let him know what she was into.